Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We are so happy to be back with full shows. Football season is over. College football season is over, I should say. The NFL just keeps on chugging, but that doesn't really affect the programming here on News Radio 92.3 at AM 1620. And I know we do have, you know, college bowl season still to come. And I'm well aware. Should point out too, this is not a sports program. I'm not a sports guy, but given that the preemptions we've been through have been for FSU football, well aware of the controversy over FSU being left out of the bowl championship series despite not losing a game in the entire season, I'll just say that just gives me more ammunition for not caring about college football. I feel like if a team can go 13 games, not lose a game, and then some board's going to come in and say, well, you know, this team over here that lost a game is a better team than you. So they're getting into the BCS and you're not. I think that's a big load of baloney. And it just makes me even less interested in college football than I was, you know, a week ago to see something like that happen. And to me, it doesn't really matter that it happened to Florida State versus some other team. It just, you know, if it had been the University of Timbuktu, I'd still think it was unfair and that it stinks, you know. Not a big NFL fan either, but the NFL makes a little more sense to me. You know, they decide who gets into the playoffs based on wins and losses. And yeah, there's some, you know, conference champions in there, but they have wild card games. They've got built-in tiebreakers. I don't see why that doesn't happen in college football, but I digress. We're going to move on from that and talk about the kind of stuff we normally talk about, unless our guest has something to say about that. Joining me to talk about all things pop culture and entertainment, as he does so very often, please welcome to the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Yeah, I want to, you know, extend my deepest sympathies to all of you angry football fans that may have accidentally tuned into us, thinking that you might be hearing an FSU game today if that did happen. Luckily, though, it's not all bad news in Florida, because being just one of the absolute most interesting and amazing states in the country does come with its own set of unique situations that we find ourselves in. From the Florida Man headlines that have so popularized the state over the last couple of, you know, maybe decade or something like that, I just now saw the trailers for Grand Theft Auto 6. Coming out on all platforms. It was released over the week, and it's essentially taken all the things that the country loves and hates about the Sunshine State and putting it all into one open world game. Julio, we talked a moment. I know you didn't don't have a lot of connection to the franchise, but I did just want to take a second to let you know, like, some of the amazing things that we're going to see in it.
Well, I'm kind of here for the concept of Florida Man, the video game. I mean, you know, I would play that game. Although I will say, part of the reason I'm not big on the Grand Theft Auto franchise, it doesn't have anything to do with the storylines or anything like that. I get nauseous playing first person shooters.
I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah. So that's been my reason for staying away from that franchise more than anything else, but hit me, give me some information here.
So it's set in Miami. We have a female protagonist this time around. It really picks up the torch from Vice City, which was a 1980s set, very Scarface influenced entry into the franchise that came out after Grand Theft Auto 4.
So you're saying Grand Theft Auto's gone woke?
Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned that. That was going to be my tirade. Grand Theft Auto has gone woke. You're on the strip in Miami in one of the shots of it, and there's just like some big chick on the top of a car twerking. You've got scenes where it's like surveillance footage of the inside of a gas station, and somebody has let like a 12-foot alligator loose into the store. It's got so many of like the memeable things that have happened in Florida Man over the years, and they've put them into the game. And I love it. I'm just super here for it. I actually, not a huge gamer. You know, there's a couple of titles that I've kept up with, Grand Theft Auto being one of them. This game has been like years in the making, so I'm super excited to check it out. And Victoria, my wife, actually saw the trailer yesterday, and she was like, yeah, I would play that, which is a huge endorsement. So anyways, I'm stoked about it. And
well, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a reason this is such a successful franchise. And I mean, video games in general, I think sometimes the general public doesn't understand what an impact video games have on popular culture and just in, on the economy in the U.S. for that matter. The amount of money that some of these games bring in eclipses some of the movies that we talk about on this show by a grand scheme. And then, you know, we see a lot of these video games then in turn getting adapted into other things. You know, we raved all year about The Last of Us on HBO. That is a video game before it was an HBO series. We're getting a Fallout series coming up. We just got a trailer that dropped for the second season of Halo, which is a video game series that has been adapted into a Paramount Plus series. There's a Borderlands movie that's been gestating for some time with Eli Roth directing. So, there's a lot of the stuff out there. And not to mention the fact that one of the biggest movies of the year, of course, was the Super Mario Brothers movie. Now, fill me in, Jeremy, where did the Super Mario Brothers come from?
Yeah, long storied history. And in addition to that, so many of the great guests that we get at Pensacon year after year have just built a huge name for themselves in the world of voice acting. So there's a lot of crossover between the world of film and the world of video games. And while Mario didn't necessarily have the storylines back in the 2D era, you get such rich world building and storytelling and character development, similar to the way you do on TV shows with something like, what was the one Nolan North was in? Far Cry. What was it called?
Uncharted.
Uncharted.
Yeah, which was also made into a movie fairly recently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, just to, you know, jump on that moment to plug something for Pensacon. Of course, Pensacon coming up February 23rd through 25th in downtown Pensacola. If you are a gamer, you like your video games, we do have Troy Baker coming, who is the original Joel, the Joel in the video games from The Last of Us.
Yeah, cool.
Also did get to appear on screen in the series, in The Last of Us series. So if you're just a fan of the TV series, you've seen him on the TV series as well. We also have Richard Epcar coming, who is the voice of Raiden in the Mortal Kombat games. So that's another very big one from the video game world. And, we have a few others that are planned to come that haven't quite been announced yet. But let's just say if you are a fan of fast-running animals with spiky blue coats, that maybe there are some people coming that you might find interesting from the video game world. So let's just, I don't think I can make it any more clear than that without just actually outright saying it. But
that's fantastic, though.
Yeah. I do think video games are something we don't talk about a lot on this show, just because, like I said, the nausea is what keeps me away. I love video games. I grew up in the golden age of arcade games. I grew up, in the Atari age and the, ColecoVision, and had the Sega Genesis and the original NES and all of that. I love video games, but so many video games have progressed to a point that I can't play them because, like, that whole first person shooter thing, I get that inner ear thing where I get nauseous, where I feel like I'm moving, but I'm not moving. It just makes me sick. And there's other video games that don't have that I can play. I do like fighting games. Big fan of the Injustice series with the DC characters.
Awesome.
Really like that Mega Versus game that came out about a year and a half ago with all the Warner Brothers game and all the Warner Brothers characters in like a Smash Brothers style environment. And honestly, I still love my vintage video games. If you put me in front of, old school arcade games, whether it be on a home console or getting a chance to actually play them in, real arcade style machines, I'm always here for that. We've got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, we've got a lot to talk about somebody that's very big in Japan and really big wherever he decides to go. You know, it's the old line about the where does a 500-pound gorilla sit? Wherever he wants. What if you're a 5-million-pound kaiju? I think you pretty much stomp wherever you want. And that seems to be what seems to be going on right now with everybody's favorite giant lizard monster, Godzilla. Godzilla is everywhere right now. Like you everywhere you look, you're going to see Godzilla. And that's not just because, of course, in his last American big screen feature, Godzilla did stomp on Pensacola.
It's so wild to think about how huge this character is right now. I think it was it's the 70th anniversary of Godzilla in Tokyo with this new Toho film hitting the States. And it's just crazy. So not only do we have the, like you said, the last legendary movie, we've got this new Toho film. First one they've made since 2016. It's called Godzilla Minus One. You and I went and saw it in the theater together opening weekend.
Yeah, got to see it in IMAX too, which was a real treat to see Godzilla almost life size.
Yeah, for sure.
I hope that if you're listening to the show, you've already heard something about this movie. I know I certainly talked about it on Andrew McKay's show in my weekly spot doing movie reviews a little over a week ago. But this movie just bears talking about in more detail because, first of all, as you said, 70 years of Godzilla, and he may be more popular now than he's ever been. This movie is already the biggest Japanese film in terms of box office receipts in the U.S. ever. Ever.
Oh, wow.
After a week. So that's saying something right there. I don't know if it says that we've been more resistant to Japanese cinema than maybe we should be. You know, because certainly there have been great films out of Japanese cinema and Japanese directors over the years. But and there have been, you know, how many films have there been, you know, Godzilla and related characters out of Japan?
30s.
At least 30.
Yeah.
Got to be more than that, probably, but I'd say at least 30. At least 30 just with Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say. And that does not include, you know, the 1998 Matthew Broderick movie. That does not include the current movies made by Legendary that take place in the Monsterverse. So I'm talking about the 2014 Godzilla with Bryan Cranston. I'm talking about Godzilla King of the Monsters, Godzilla versus Kong. We're going to talk about all of that universe in a little bit because there is a lot of news and a lot of new material in that universe too. But you know, just in the course of the various Japanese versions of God, and there have been a variety of different versions of Godzilla in Japan also. You've got to be at least 30 movies. And I'm here to tell you, this new one, Godzilla Minus One, it might be the best one. Like, it might. I mean,
don't think you can argue that.
I mean, you can, because you can argue about the original. The original is absolutely a classic and is a much more serious movie than people give it credit for. And really does, you know, have a lot of metaphor and a lot of weight behind it that this film also has going for it. And I think part of the reason this film has some of that going for it the way it does is that they've done something very interesting in that I would not say this is a remake of the original Godzilla, but it is kind of a reimagining of that early days. It does go back to the World War II era and the immediate post-war era in Japan, which is when the original Godzilla takes place. And it really does kind of lean into where Japan was after World War II, how bad things were in Japan after World War II. And that's where the human side of the story kind of comes in on this. And that to me, is what works the most about this film. First of all, yes, you're going to get plenty of big kaiju monster action in this movie, which is the main thing everybody goes to a Godzilla movie for. This movie looks like $100 million, and it was made for 15.
May I real quick? Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. So you talked about in the beginning what the box office was on this film, and you and I talked about the creator a couple weeks ago and how amazing it was that that movie was done on the budget that that was. This movie was made for $15 million, and it looks incredible.
I would put it toe-to-toe with anything that's come out of the U.S. in the past year.
It looks amazing.
In terms of the overall look, and I'm not sure how much of it was done with practical and how much of it was done with CGI, but
it's
seamless.
All green screen and all CGI.
But it's seamless. At no point did I feel like I was watching, you know, a bunch of computer graphics. I felt like I was watching Godzilla, which is what you should feel. That's the thing. With the classic Godzilla movies, you always did have a guy in a suit. So no matter how hokey that might look sometimes, it looked real. You know, there was no, you know, there was no sense of unreality. There's no uncanny valley, no, you know, being taken out of the world. You might be taken out of the world by, you know, something that was maybe a little cheesy or shoddy or campy, but not by, you know, something not looking real. Everything in this movie looks real. This film, I just can't say enough, looks like $1 billion, and it's made for, comparatively speaking, especially when we're talking U.S. budgets, nothing. U.S. studios need to...
your average studio movie?
Oh, average studio movie? I mean, they don't even really start looking at things that don't cost more than $20 million anymore. So, I mean, you know, it's... And if you're talking about a big tentpole movie, if you're talking about, you know, an MCU movie, a DC movie, an Indiana Jones, something like that, well upwards of $200 million, easy.
Yeah.
You know, I would say very much that the Hollywood studios need to go after Takahashi Yamazaki, who is the writer and director and special effects artist of this film. He actually did the special effects himself, which I think is really interesting too. Yeah. Came up with, you know, a great film that looks fantastic, both from the effects standpoint and from the directorial standpoint. And just has a great, great story to it, too. So I would love to see this guy get some work here in the U.S. I think this film shows that he's more than ready. And, you know, let's give him a Marvel movie. Let's give him a, you know, a DC movie, or, you know, let's give him a MonsterVerse movie, something. But, you know, this guy's got the touch, at least, you know, based on this movie. I don't know what else he's done over the years. Relatively older guy, 59. So yeah, I'm just looking up his filmography here. And yeah, he's got a number of films under his belt. So, you know, I think it's time. Give him a chance. He's got the touch, man. I love this movie. And to go back to what we were saying, a lot of times these great movie, these monster movies, you're just, all right, yeah, let's get to the monster. That's all we care about. Just want to see the monster, because there's just so much, so little else on the bone there. That is not the case with this movie. This movie actually has an incredible, absorbing human story with characters you're going to care about, and that are not just there to get stomped on and eaten and tossed around. And there's plenty of that too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the level of, like, intense personal attacks in this movie from Godzilla are maybe more than some of the others. There's some real, like, thematic Moby Dick Jaws stuff going on here that I really, really dug, that I haven't really seen with Godzilla before. But
I don't think in the history of the 70-year legacy of Godzilla that we've ever really or actually seen him kill anybody on screen. That does not a good movie make. It just shows that this interpretation of Godzilla is much more aggressive, much more proactive in his just desire to destroy and level Japan in a way that we've never seen before. So that in itself is a very specific theme to this movie. But, you know, Also, over 70 years, we've never seen a Godzilla sequel outside of maybe two or three of them. I'd like to see a sequel to this.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you can kind of interpret, you know, the series of Godzilla movies, because there are, you know, different series of films, and you can kind of interpret some of them as being in the same world together. But as far as like a direct sequel, I think you're right. I think that there is certainly open door to have that happen here.
Yeah.
Given what, and I don't want to spoil anything. I don't want to spoil anything about this film. I want people to go out and see this film if you haven't seen it already.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have, and it's gotten amazing reviews. You're running like 97% positive on Rotten Tomatoes. And then the audience reaction is running like 97% positive as well. And it is already the biggest Japanese film in the U.S., as I mentioned. So a lot of people have seen it, but not as many people as need to see it. This truly is not just for Godzilla fans. This is one of the best movies of the year. And I really would like to see more people go out and see this. But is there the possibility for a sequel? I'd say that there is. There's a lot more Godzilla stuff to talk about, and we'll do that in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And we're talking about all things giant monsters and Godzilla. And we can't really talk about all of that without talking about the new trailer that just dropped for the next movie in the legendary MonsterVerse series. This is taking up after Godzilla versus Kong. Now we have Godzilla X Kong. So I couldn't resist playing that song by James Kochaka Superstar. I recognize that it's monkey versus robot and not monkey versus lizard, but, you know, close enough. At any rate, so we've got this new trailer continuing the storyline that we have seen in these MonsterVerse movies and now TV series, which we'll talk about in just a little bit as well. But this one looks like after Godzilla fought Kong, now they're going to team up in this one against some other kind of menace. Have you seen the trailer, Jeremy?
I have. So I guess the big takeaway from it, Kong would be like the American counterpart to Godzilla in a lot of ways when it comes to giant monster movies.
Sure.
He's been a mainstay in pop culture for a long time, and there are the ardent Godzilla fans and then the Kong fans, and I think that Godzilla versus Kong was like a nice mashup that kind of appeased both audiences, and it was a fun movie. And as you mentioned, Godzilla visits Pensacola, quote-unquote, and we always joke about that, because if you're from Pensacola and you've seen the movie, clearly, that is not anything like what Pensacola actually is. But
yeah, I especially loved when they went to Chinatown. You know, Pensacola's famous Chinatown district. Pensacola's famous Chinatown district. Yeah, wish we had a Chinatown
title.
Yeah,
but like one of the songs in the soundtrack. So all that said, to say, I don't. Maybe if I didn't see Minus One right before I saw the trailer, I would probably be more enthusiastic in it. We get pink dorsal fins or purple dorsal fins with Godzilla, which is a cool new aesthetic thing. But like, I'm not feeling
which for
it
some
that
reason
much,
some people
Julio
are losing their minds about. Some, you know, of course, you know, because you got to just have some reason to complain about things. That's the thing that they're somehow the pink is woke or it's making him look weak or whatever, and it's like, Godzilla's had pink before. This is not totally new. It's not totally out of left field. And also,
no,
it's a make-believe giant lizard. You know,
and it's a new toy opportunity.
Yeah,
also.
You know, can you just not for once? Can you just let one thing be? Just
yeah,
once.
Yeah, that is not my
just
complaint
be cool.
about it. But
just
I
once.
Have heard a lot of that.
Just be cool. Just once. You know, I mean. Whatever. I mean, I don't know. I liked the trailer. I've been kind of divided on some of the MonsterVerse stuff so far. I liked a lot of Godzilla versus Kong, though nowhere near as much as Minus One. I was kind of so-so on Godzilla King of the Monsters. I did
yeah,
like
not wild about it.
I did like Skull Island a lot. The Kong Skull Island, mm-hmm. which is also part of this. This world, this series of movies. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering if this series that we're seeing right now on Apple TV Plus is going to fill in some more to make, to kind of make that world a little more cohesive. And I feel like it is. And there is a series, if you don't know right now, going on Apple TV Plus called Monarch Legacy of Monsters. Monarch Legacy of Monsters. And Monarch, if you haven't watched these movies, is like kind of the shadowy organization that has been tracking and combating the Kaiju over the course of
Kaiju
these
Shield.
Movies. Going back from, yeah, Kaiju Shield. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Going back to 2014's Godzilla and has continued through this continuing series of films that was involved in Kong Skull Island. And in fact, we get a flashback at the very beginning of this series to the period of Kong Skull Island and get to see John Goodman back, who appeared in that film, get to see a little bit more of him in that role, just as a little cameo at the very beginning of this series. And I have to say, I know we're like four or five episodes into the series right now. I've only gotten to see the first two, but I do feel like this is filling in a lot of backstory, and I'm really enjoying that. There are kaiju in the episodes, but there's a good human story here too. And I think that's an important element. I think it can't just be about the kaiju versus kaiju or the kaiju versus human. You have to care about the characters. And I'm starting to care about these characters. And interestingly enough, also, one more Pensacola connection for the legendary MonsterVerse. One of the leads of this series, Kiersey Clemons, is a Pensacola native.
Is that right? I had no idea.
Yeah, she is. She, Kiersey Clemons, who, of course, was also in the Flash movie earlier in this year, has been in a number of things over the years. She plays a hacker that is kind of tied to this brother and sister who didn't know that they each other existed and didn't know that their family was connected to Monarch. And they're investigating this mystery behind what happened to their father and what's going on. And they're some of the main characters of this. And then, of course, you have... You have events taking place in two time periods, and they're really taking advantage of some fun casting by doing that, because there's only one character that is appearing in both time periods, and he is a military officer who is played in the present by Kurt Russell, but in the past set scenes, he is played by Kurt Russell's son, Wyatt, and almost seamless. It's kind of uncanny.
Wyatt is doing such a good Kurt Russell, and I don't want to say impersonation because that might be kind of reductive, but he is evoking a young Kurt Russell that is just, I mean, like only a son could, you know, it's so good.
Yeah, I got to say, I started out with the first episode of this series just a little bit like a little lukewarm, a little not caring, liking some of the detail. I really enjoyed the fact that... after everything that's happened, they actually have Godzilla shelters and a Godzilla evacuation plan in Tokyo.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of brilliant. I thought it was an idea that was kind of overdue, actually, because how many times has Godzilla destroyed Tokyo? You know, it's almost like there's a personal grudge. I really liked that. I like that we're getting into the shadowy Monarch organization and what that's all about. And I'm really kind of eager to see where we go from here. As I mentioned, there's a few episodes out that I haven't had a chance to see yet. I don't know if you're further ahead than me, Jeremy, or not. Are you?
I am, and we'll avoid spoilers altogether. Just we'll kind of wait and see how it plays out. I'm sure we can circle back around, have another discussion as the series ends. But I will say that it starts off, episode one and two in particular, really evoke the 2014 film and the style that Gareth Edwards was going for. And I really appreciate that. Like, it's kind of the bastard stepchild in regard to the MonsterVerse films, which I find interesting because I feel like it's the one that is kind of the most true to, in particular, the 1954 film, but then again, the Minus One movie that we just now saw. And as the story progresses, we are clearly, as you said, filling in the details, bridging the gap between the tone of that film and what's more current in the legendary MonsterVerse. And I prefer the grandeur and the mythic tone of the 2014 film as this big kind of force of nature, this juggernaut, this almost godlike being. And I know they kind of refer to them as titans as it goes along, and I like that as these mythical creatures. But when I see Godzilla and Kong doing superhero poses and like busting into full stride as like a team up thing at the end of the trailer, it just feels more like it's geared towards a younger audience, and that's great for younger audiences, but that stuff doesn't appeal to me as much as the almost like Lovecraftian nature of this sea monster that comes up out of the water and just like wreaks vengeance upon a world that's kind of like at odds with itself, creating destruction and chaos on its own that like threatens the future of the world itself. So I like Godzilla, or excuse me, Monarch Legacy of Monsters. I've been engaged with it. Like you said, the human characters are really good. I like the world building and all of that stuff, but I just, preference wise, I lean so much further towards Minus One than I have with, as you said, like King of the Monsters or Godzilla versus Kong, which definitely have their appeal. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy watching them, but it's not the same kind of feeling that I get.
I'm kind of here for both. I got to admit that like my favorite scene in the Godzilla X Kong trailer was that scene that you just cited where Godzilla and Kong are kind of teamed up and they're like running towards the camera together. I don't know why, but I kind of dug that. So
there's an appeal to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Remains to be seen what the execution will be. And, you know, like I said, I've been kind of iffy on these movies. And interestingly enough, you know, weirdly, the only one of these films I haven't seen is the 2014 Godzilla. So I clearly need to get around to seeing that. I'm also interested to see if we're going to see any of the other human characters we've seen from the MonsterVerse pop up in this series. It was great to see John Goodman. Maybe we see Millie Bobby Brown show up. Maybe we see Kyle Chandler show up. You know, there's a lot out there that we could see. You know, we'll continue to follow this series as it continues. We do have to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
This is what you'll get when you're mad.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. Jeremy, I think most people that know me would be rather surprised that I'm playing that song. You know, I am pretty well noted as not the world's biggest Radiohead fan, but I got to give credit where it's due. That song was used in the first episode of a new season of a show that we followed pretty closely in the first season, but given all the preemptions we've had over the past several weeks, we haven't had a chance to talk about it all this season and that we're going to catch up with, and that being Invincible. Just used so effectively, just used so effectively in the first episode of Invincible this season that I think I even texted you and said, yeah, man, I don't know what it is, but I connected with that song a lot harder with it being used in Invincible than I ever did. Like it just slapped different.
Four episodes in, and that has been my absolute favorite moment of season two of Invincible, is that you almost begrudgingly relented that Karma Police, one of the greatest alternative rock songs ever performed and written.
Okay, and that's a bit much. That's a bit much. It's a good song.
Hey, to each their own, man. It's a good song.
Yeah. And just used over this scene. I mean, it just so fit the scenes that it was used over. They used almost the entire song. Like it really ran for, like, the song's like 4.5 minutes long. It ran for 3.5 minutes of this episode of Invincible. And just over this montage of, you know, and we'll put up the spoiler warning here in case you haven't watched any of Invincible, but we ended last season with Mark Invincible discovering that his dad was not the benevolent superhero that he always believed him to be, but he was the vanguard for an alien invasion that was going to take over the world, and that he expected his son to take over the world with him, that he had no respect for humans, that he considered Mark's mother a pet, which, you know, kind of says something about, you know, Omni-Man, his dad, but that's another whole story. We won't get into what that might mean. But and we get to see more of that in this season, actually, now that I think about it. But, you know, just basically had his entire world turned over and destroyed. And this battle between them, you know, basically destroys most of Chicago and causes damage all over the world. And, you know, Mark barely leaves with his life. His father leaves the planet. So he's lost his father. The world believes that his father's dead. Doesn't know that Omni-Man was a bad guy on top of everything else. And so he's like trying to make up for this and deal with this grief at the same time. And that's kind of been like,
but interestingly, that's not where the season starts, because what we see is a world in which Mark and his father are fighting on the same side, seemingly subjugating all of humanity. This is like destiny fulfilled. Omni-Man has taught Invincible that, you know, that this is what the right path is or whatever. And four episodes in, we haven't circled back around to that, but that was some really striking and equally disturbing imagery that we get at the beginning of the first episode.
Yeah, we do have some multiverse stuff going on here, and I don't want to, I know that's kind of become like the, people are starting to feel like the multiverse is being overused, but this is straight out of the comics on this, and the way they're using it is different than I think what we're seeing in Marvel or what we're seeing elsewhere.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that's going to play out in a different way, and I think we're fine, but it's been interesting because we're watching these characters recover from their grief and deal with their grief, and not just Mark and his mother primarily, but other characters as well. We're still seeing Mark's life going on. He's graduated from high school. He started college. He and his girlfriend have taken things to a new level. And just as things are starting to ease back into recovery, that's when the other shoe drops, and Mark gets recruited to go into space to save this alien race from this meteor shower. And surprise, there's no actual meteor shower, and it's a ruse to get Mark to this planet that has been taken over, but not in the same way that he was going to take over Earth, by Omni-Man. And Mark is reunited with his father, and there's a lot of good and bad in that. And it's interesting because we see that what happened on Earth had an effect on Omni-Man and maybe caused him to change. And, he did this irredeemable thing, and now he's on a redemption arc, in a sense. And while still acknowledging that what he did was irredeemable, he's changed, and he's struggling with the fact that he's changed. Like, he did not want to change, and he does not want to feel the feelings that he's feeling. And it's allowing you to see a more human side of this character that's really interesting, while still seeing, like, the complete, utter just villainy of his race, his
just complete xenophobes, like the worst xenophobia in the world. And then you kind of counterbalance that with the fact that he's like helping this society of, you don't want to say subhuman, because that's the kind of reinforces that idea, but
they're sentient creatures, like, but they're insectoid people. Yeah, they're insectoid.
Correct.
You know, they're sentient creatures. They're intelligent. They're not, you know, they're not human, but they are sentient and of equal, you know, intelligence and bearing to, you know, humans or any other humanoid race. You know, we have seen other alien races in this show, and I want to talk a little bit about that in a moment too. But yeah, he's gone off and started a new life amongst these aliens. He has a new wife and has a second kid. And so Mark's
kind of
not only
your point about seeing them as pets and how that almost kind of recontextualizes it when you learn that he has this family with a completely different species of creature.
Yeah. So that in and of itself is something that he knows would be a violation of what Viltrumite society would accept, and come to pay the price of this. You know, the end of this. We end on this. We're at a mid-season break in the show, if you don't know. So the show's not going to come back until January at this point. Mid-season break ends on quite a cliffhanger. And
well,
not in
the
traditional sense
other
of...
other guy's story.
Yeah, well, we also have... You know, we got to see our friend Alan the Alien again, who we really fell in love with in the one episode that he was in, voiced by Seth Rogen, who's this intergalactic defender. And we get to find out that, you know, he works for this union of worlds that have come together to oppose the Viltrumites, and they're, you know, trying to form an empire across the universe. And he is kind of the only superhuman of that world, or not superhuman, but super being, let's say. And, he works for this organization, and we get introduced to the council that leads them, and they're headed up by this character voiced by none other than Peter Cullen, Optimus Prime himself, in that great heroic Optimus Prime voice that is instantly recognizable. And just as I love the way this show subverts your expectations, because you hear that voice, and how can that voice be anything but a hero? How can that voice be anything but the stalwart Optimus Prime? And spoiler alert, we discover that this guy is a mole for the Viltrumites.
If you were bothered by the amount of times people got stabbed and didn't die in Scream 6, just get ready to take that to a whole different level with the way that characters just get, and not even being specific, but like, you think they're dead, they probably would be dead five times over. They've been dismembered, they've been punched in half, and then the next episode they're like, no, I'm actually good.
Well, we're talking about
things pretty good.
In fairness, we're talking about characters with superhuman abilities. You know, the playing field's a little bit different, and there are other characters in this show that don't have superhuman abilities that do take a lot longer to recover. In fact, there's a mention very briefly of Mark's best friend's boyfriend, who was turned into like this cyborg monster in season one, and how he's still recovering from that. So, you know, so there's different degrees here. Yeah, there's been a couple of times where there have been characters that you thought for sure were dead that turned up to be dead. And I'm kind of hoping that's going to be the case for Alan, but it sure didn't seem like it.
No, but don't. Jokes aside, I am absolutely loving this season. I'm sure you're digging it as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I kind of hate that we've got a few weeks to wait until we get more of it, because just continues to be a fantastic series. It's really taking the superhero stuff in new and different directions, and in, you know, a lot more harsh and violent directions than we sometimes see in this world too. But just really continues to work. There's so many characters I haven't even gotten to touch on, but unfortunately we're out of town for the time for this week. We will be back next week with more. However, until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.